Welcome to Build Your Dream Network. I'm Kelly Hoey. I see people struggling to connect effectively all the time, so I created this podcast to help you master your network building needs. Whether you're seeking a new job, looking for a promotion, or scaling your business, you need a network, and you're in the right place to get the advice you need. And don't worry, my advice is real. It's actionable and practical because it's the advice I follow and is what has transformed my career from the traditional to the unexpected. So let's get started. So I am just thrilled to have in the podcast studio today my friend Sherelle, who is a data-driven journalist, an entrepreneur, founder, and publisher of The Plug, which reports on the Black innovation economy. So good to see you.
It's so good to see you as well. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming up to New York from Atlanta. Yes. Which kind of leads into a good first question, as we've discovered chatting over the years, that we're both originally from the Pacific Northwest. So your life and career has taken you from Seattle to New York to Connecticut to Charlotte, back to New York, Miami, now Atlanta.
Yes. Yes. I've changed a lot of zip codes. My family calls me sometimes. They're just like, what is your address? Because we can't keep up. Like, we just can't.
We can't keep up. But you're in Atlanta now.
Yes.
What are some of the ways you personally, you've got a national presence, you've got a national platform with The Plug, you speak, you know, you got a big network, you got a big community, but all right, yeah. What are you doing? How are you making your new community?
Gosh, I'm jumping in, and I did move to Atlanta specifically because I felt like I really do want to immerse myself in community and get rooted and anchored again. And so right before I made the decision to pack up and move to Atlanta, I reached out to a couple of contacts and friends that I had built over the years and just said, hey, I'm thinking about coming. Who do you think I should start connecting with? You know, what are some cool things happening in the city around tech and social justice and social entrepreneurship? And, you know, where should I be looking? And so I started kind of populating a list. And this seems very, very type A, but I wanted to make sure that I had a true understanding of what was taking place in the city and not making assumptions about what was and what wasn't there. When I did make the decision and I was just about a week or two away from moving, I sent out an email and I just said, hey, you know, I'm moving to the city. Here are the things I really care about. Where can I serve? And I just kind of listed things that I was interested in, from academic communities to communities focused on things like affordable housing or what have you. And immediately I got at least three or four people that called me right after that email. And they were just like, hey, I'm working on this, actually. Would love to pull you into here. So my transition into the city was very warm and welcoming. And it gave me an opportunity also to be connected to various events taking place, to meet other people to help grow my network. And then lastly, I also just kind of reached out to people who came to my mind, you know, from other recommendations and just said, hey, listen, I'd love to meet you for coffee. And I've 30 days now into the city. And so I'm still having some of those coffee meetings and gatherings.
Wow. Wow. I love that you said, where can I serve? Mm-hmm. You know, because so many times people send emails or outreach and say, you know, who can I meet? What can you do for me? Where you're saying, how can I serve?
Yeah.
And I think that makes, you know, that kind of approach and attitude towards building community and having a community kind of open their arms, because you're not asking what you can do for yourself, but what you can do for them.
Absolutely. And I think when you come from that posture, it also allows people to open up a bit more. When you don't have like a specific agenda, I kind of go in with questions as a journalist should, not making assumptions. And, you know, I've led some various initiatives in different cities. And so I knew as well that I wanted this year and this transition to be about my learning and creating a slower life, which I don't think that's going to happen. but truly not necessarily trying to lead things, but more so of participate and kind of see who else is leading really great things that I can, you know, pop into and share what I can.
Let's pick up on that, because it hits a theme you and I, you know, kind of chatting about before we jumped on the podcast, and that learning. And you mentioned when you had the role, was it up in Connecticut, and you learned about executive coaches and you hadn't heard about these things before. And your approach to learning, because I think that's really incredible and really valuable for others to hear.
Yeah, you know, I think going from an environment like in New York City, which was very fast-paced, and the energy was just really like climb to the top as quickly as possible, and everything driven, you know, in your 20s, especially graduating during a recession, it was like everything was survival mode. And so it didn't really give you an opportunity to take a breath and to figure out, how do I approach my work? How do I approach my work environment? What do I need to feel like a whole, full person that's supported, that is also rooted in community versus this just sort of being one stop on the journey? And, you know, everything can change, you know, from layoffs to life transitions. So we never know how long we are in a space, but how do we kind of approach it with intentionality? And when I did the public policy fellowship in Connecticut with the Zoom Foundation, and they paired us with an executive coach, it was the first time I'd even heard the term. It was the first time I heard the term executive presence. And then it was the first time that someone asked me, well, what kind of work environment do you want to be in? And I'm like, what do you mean? The one that pays me money.
Like, there's the work environment I'll take.
Right. You know, or, you know, the other question was, what kind of people do you want to work with? And these very critical questions about being thoughtful about how you select your experiences, because, you know, a lot of folks, and I see this a lot online when people talk about toxic work environments, or they just talk about not getting promoted or what have you. And it's really hard on the onset when you're going into an experience to know what it truly is like internally. But there's now some cues and things that you can pick up on as you are developing, and we call it at the time your filtering criteria. You know, where do you need to go to be your best self? And my transition out of Connecticut, once my fellowship ended, was going from a government space into a startup tech company. And for me, I knew that I wanted to be a part of all the great things that were happening around this concept of innovation in the country. I knew I wanted to work with very smart people who were thinking about how to make the world more efficient. I knew that I wanted to be able to be in an opportunity where I could grow my skills. And one of the things I had wanted to do that I didn't accomplish, particularly in this role that I was able to take on following my experience, was I knew I wanted to be able to have access to international opportunities. For me, that was the first time anyone had ever asked me to think about, because usually it was like, you know, you choose a job because it has a great name and, you know, there's some prestige to it to add to your resume, or I think I might want to be in NPR, or I think I want to just be in marketing. And there's not necessarily a clear path unless a company gives one to you.
Right.
But it was the first time like anyone had ever asked me that. And so what I loved about that experience was it made me really sit back and think about what is my lifelong commitment to leadership and leadership development, you know, specifically, and thinking through how do I continue to invest in that in myself? And then when I give advice, particularly to my mentees and groups of younger people, particularly college students, you know, not giving them the same run of the mill, be passionate, do something you love, but more of like, look, listen, some of us have student loans to pay, some of us has bills to pay. Like, let's talk about where you need to be, how you need to think, right? Because your thinking and your mental model is going to help you make the best decisions for yourself as you're evolving and learning. And if you lead with that, it can kind of decrease the burden, because I know it did for me, but it can decrease the burden of feeling like, oh, wait, did I make a wrong choice or did I make a right choice? And it's like, is there such thing as the right or wrong, or is it more of here's my intent behind my choice and this is what I came to get? And that way you don't see your experience as the wrong experience, but more so of I came to get what I came to get and right. I got it and now I'm good.
And I'm so impressed with your personal commitment to your leadership development, and you're not waiting for someone to hand it to you. And as you had sort of shared to me that the executive coach you had worked with, you sort of said, I need to create an account. I'd say to people, you know, you got to create your yes me fund. You wanted like a yes me fund that was, where's my executive coach? Where's the conferences I want to attend? Not waiting for anyone to offer them to you, but to say, this is what I need to do. What are some of the other ways that you're doing that today that may not involve, you know, I think if any of our listeners for the podcast, you know, don't have the same flexibility to get a coach or pay to go to a conference, what are some of the other ways that you are enhancing your leadership skills?
Yeah, absolutely. In the world of tech, we always talk about a tech stack, and I like to talk about a content stack. what is the content that I'm consuming? Where am I subscribed to? What am I listening to? You know, obviously I'm listening to your podcast, of course, because I'm like, wait.
I didn't pay her to say that.
No, she didn't. No, I'm like, and I tweet you all the time where I'm like, oh my God, I wish I would have known this, you know, at 20 or 22 and 25, you know. So between, you know, my podcast stack of everything from management to handling conflict in the workplace, even though I'm an entrepreneur, I still have to figure out how to do that from a digital and remote perspective, to money and finance. And then I'm such a huge, like, finding lectures on YouTube, because most academic institutions will post their lectures. So again, like, I'm also fancy frugal. I tell people I'm fancy frugal. So if I can't go to that conference, 9 times out of 10, they're going to post, you know, the lectures, they're going to post the talks and the fireside chats. I love Oprah. I love Arianna Huffington. I love just, like, powerful women CEOs. I love looking at their poise, their delivery, what they talk about, how they talk about it, how they dress. And as I think about and aspire to reach that level, you know, as the years unfold, I try to watch a lot of what they say, what they do, where they're appearing, where they show up. And I save those. I save those into that, like, saved later feature on YouTube. And I just have a collection between that and the TED Talks. And I follow very interesting people online and on Twitter. And I learn a lot. I mean, Twitter can be, you know, hit or miss, can either be extremely crazy and on the other end of the spectrum, you have very thoughtful authors and technologists and writers and thinkers and awesome journalists and teachers and people who are sharing very, very openly and very candidly about their life experiences, in addition to their work, their writing, other people's writing, giving their analysis and their synopsis. And so all of those things for me make up the mix of my leadership experience. One of the things that I did in college, and I don't think I realized it at the time how powerful it was, it was like right when, like, the Twitters and the Facebook and what have you were becoming part of the marketing mix for companies who were like, I don't know how to use these things, right? And so it was perfect for, like, a early 20-something to say, like, hey, if you let me come to this conference, I'll do your social media. And so I, like, found myself at places like Adweek and, like, other, like, phenomenal industry-related conferences, standing next to the CEO of Frito-Lay and watching all of these things unfold and predicting kind of where we are now. And it was such an awesome opportunity for me to have access to high-level conversations. And even though I was kind of just like a fly on the wall in the room, it exposed me in a way that also it didn't cost me anything. Right. And so I always encourage my mentees and folks who are also trying to learn industry or get into industry, find a way to volunteer at a conference, and you can get some downtime to go and pop into the workshops and into the lectures. And that's also another way to decrease those costs for that leadership development component you're desiring.
Such good advice. And, you know, I love the fly on the wall. I mean, there is a reason I like to say to people, we have two ears and one mouth, uh-huh. You know, let's use them in that proportion. And some of your best networking learning is just listening, observing, just the ability to be in the room so that when you enter it again at another time, you're familiar with the layout or the dynamic, all
Absolutely.
That good stuff. Let's talk about college, and let's talk about, as we chatted, you were talking about your generation and the generation that's out now, your mentees, the kind of eager and into instant gratification with careers and expectations. What's your advice to either your college age self, or what would you tell in terms of career and what you build?
Yeah, you know, so many things. Number one, don't date that guy. yeah, that definitely would be the first one. Secondarily, it would definitely be to kind of slow down and realize that, you know, the process is the process. And you're not going to lose the opportunities ahead of you to kind of really focus in on getting good at work and getting good and at understanding what my role is in delivering work. I remember I got my first official, like, post-college job immediately. I want to say I got hired about 3 days before graduation, and then I started the Monday after graduation. And I remember, like, being in this environment working for a designer, and I remember given all this autonomy to grow and develop. Like, she just really excited to kind of see what I could bring to the table. I had this blog, I had, you know, these like little side businesses I developed, and I was really more so hired off of the strength of, you have an entrepreneurial spirit, so how do we cultivate that here within the company? And I remember like at some point there was this tension because I really felt like I knew so much and I wasn't given the latitude to like execute the way that I wanted to execute. And I remember her saying to me, when I was 22, I thought I knew everything as well. It was like a mentor moment, even though this was my boss. And she's like, stop, just stop. Like, let's have this discussion because I know that you think that you know everything. She's like, but I've been doing this for 50 years. And so it was kind of one of those moments where I had to like pause and, you know, swallow some ego a bit. Being part of the generation of like, oh, you're so great and y'all are going to change the world. And, you know, you have the Googles and the Amazon of the world who are hiring 20-somethings and you're getting signing bonuses and six-figure salaries and ping pong tables at work. And the concept of slowing down to listen and to develop and to work on some of those soft skills, because the technique and the being of a practitioner is only like one very small part of the actual work, right? And we see it almost every day with people who are terrible CEOs. They've built something phenomenal, and then their companies grew so fast, and they got all, you know, got all the money in the world from their venture capitalist. But they never learned how to manage people. They never learned how to talk to people. Those interdisciplinary skills around others in the workplace. And which is why we do have that kind of diversity and inclusion challenge, because everything is so narrowly focused on grow big, grow fast. And we never take a step back and see, well, what kind of executive leadership training do we need to make sure that every single person that steps through this door gets? We automatically believe that because you have the degrees, you have the credentials, maybe you've done something great, maybe you sold a company, what have you, that you've got it. And then you hear internally at some of these companies like how toxic it is. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's like, well, how can that be? Well, it's like because these people have never been forced to question what their personal ethics are, how they manage, how they help to develop other people. It's very narrowed. And I think we're hopefully at least getting to a place where that conversation around leadership is changing. But definitely for my 22-year-old self, the process is the process. You're being developed and refined and there's just no rush. But it was definitely that like, oh, like the company I started in college, it never became a $1 billion company. So I'm behind the curve. So I have to rush and try to hit this before 25 or hit this before 30. And so it made me very lousy in terms of taking the time to sit back and be thoughtful about the moves that I was making. And so, yeah, I mean, 22-year-old Sherelle would have had a whole different state of mind and one boyfriend less mistake. So
so anyone else is out there who's in this 22-year-old or younger, take this advice. Trust the process. I think there's an anxiety I had over my own career when I was an attorney in my 20s and wanting things to happen. And I think there's a whole lot of it. You know, like I'm having the career I've always wanted, but I'm having it now at 54. I think my earlier self would have enjoyed the career, maybe gotten even more out of it if I had just said, you know what, here's the process. This isn't all that I'm supposed to be doing, practicing banking and insolvency law in Toronto. This is not all. So while I am doing this, let me do as much of it and take as much of it as I can. You hit on another word, inclusion, diversity. You've been involved in so many communities and building communities across, entrepreneurial communities across the United States. Any ideas on how we can make networks and networking more inclusive?
Yeah, it's really interesting because, of course, I get calls probably once a week from companies, maybe mid-sized companies up to great multinational, multi-billion-dollar companies. And it really comes down to the same question, right? It's like, hey, we're doing this and we're still not seeing the number of applicants from underrepresented groups, or we're still not getting people applying to roles here en masse. And sometimes the answer is really simple. It's, who did you ask? You know, who's involved in your process? Because if your leadership team, who's also managing maybe the networking event, if they're not coming from different perspectives and different environments, you don't get as much value out of how you're marketing these things, right? I think about, and you've talked about this a lot, about like, you never know who's network, like what their personal networks look like from organizations or associations that we're all a part of. those things extend beyond when you do have a diverse group of people. When I think about how big sororities and fraternities are in the South, right? It's major. You know, it's very major. It is a cult that I never became part of. But that's significant because when I think about every time we've done our marketing for, you know, maybe an event in Charlotte, or we think about how do we better reach a certain demographic in a certain city, the first step is, well, what are the major fraternities and sororities there? How do we connect with their chapter presidents? There's a National Society of Black Engineers that has been around since the 1970s. How are we engaging them? They have chapters where they go into schools teaching kids about science and engineering. So when we talk about the pipeline, the diversity inclusion context, it's like for every underrepresented group, there is an association or a representative that can at least be a first touch point, right? Because you don't want to just rely on like, oh, okay, yeah, we'll send it kind of to the token group, but more so of how do we build relationships with people? Ask what their needs are, ask what their members' needs are, and really cultivate strategically a relationship that then becomes embedded into the culture of the company. So that way, when you are offering opportunities or you are setting the scene for networking events, conversations, I was at a table at a major tech conference and across the table from this group of folks who run this conference every year. And they're like, we can never get women or women of color to speak. And I'm like, have you asked? Like how, what? You know, and their first thing was like, can you help us? And again, I think sometimes it comes down to just sheer laziness. And I'm always just so confused because I'm like, I could even just scroll Twitter and find like five or six people that could potentially be dynamic candidates for something like this. And I don't necessarily agree with just like cherry picking people and making it this kind of charity case, right? It's more of how do we make sure also folks get completely embedded in what we're doing here and in our work. And this isn't just like a one-time thing so that when we take photos and post it on Instagram that it doesn't look as bad as like a bunch of white guys standing around in a room. It's a very multifaceted question, but it really comes down to the simplicity of, are the teams organizing these things representative of the communities in which we operate, in which we serve? Who have we not asked? Who's not at the table? And then which associations and partnerships do we actually need to grow and develop as well to make sure that we don't have this problem again in the future and people don't feel taken advantage of or tokenized in the process?
Thank you. Thank you very much for coming in and chatting. When the next time you're in New York, will you come back?
Yes, of course. Anytime. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Build Your Dream Network. Stay connected and don't miss a networking insight by subscribing to the podcast. And while you're there, I'd love you to rate and review the show too. Are you looking for more networking advice? Pick up a copy of my book, Build Your Dream Network. It's your guide to modern networking. I'd like to hear your networking questions, tips, and ideas. Connect with me via my website, jkellyhoey.co. You'll find links to all my social media accounts, plus a contact form to email me your questions. I'm Kelly Hoey, and I'll be back again next week to tackle your networking challenges.